All right, I think we're just going to have to start with everyone waiting for some food. So clearly these are all, everyone inside here are the people who didn't get tickets to the party tonight, I'm guessing. What party? Oh, I don't know. That's exactly right. Oh, other parties. All right, so welcome to Enterprise Automation Unplugged, everybody. For those of you who don't know me, and to be honest, there's probably not that many because half the people here seem to be people I worked with and the other half seem to be people I work with currently. My name's George Spirakis. I am a Senior Premier Field Engineer and an Azure Ranger. These are the two sort of roles that I do day-to-day at Microsoft, or for Microsoft, I should say. When I'm not with customers, you occasionally, and very occasionally, see me blogging on the Config Manager Dog's blog. More on why a guy who sort of did Config Manager for quite a while is talking to you about automation a little bit later at the end of the session today. So there's three main areas I want to talk about today. So first, why automate? So why should you spend your time, your money and your effort to automate in the first place? And secondly, what and how to automate? And inside that, I'm also going to talk about three particular customer examples that I've got, customers that I've worked with, to actually get automation in place from start to finish. And then finally, which tool should I use? And it's a question I get asked all the time. I'm going to talk about the three Microsoft automation tools because they're the ones that I deal with on a day-to-day basis. But I'm also going to talk about tools that I tend to see at enterprises on occasion. So why automate? Now, engineers like myself and people that I work with, anytime we go to talk to customers, what we tend to find when we're talking about automation or we're about to gather and get some piece of automation in place, this is what we usually get from them. They'll say, no thanks, we are too busy. I've literally had a customer cancel an engagement with me on a Friday because he said, you know what, we're not going to use the hours that we've got with you to do automation. I'd rather use it to get some best practice done for some particular product, which is important in itself, but not necessarily more as important as automation. So what we tend to find is people don't see the value in automation. And that's what I'm here to try and do, to try and convince you that it is worth your time, money and effort. So first thing we're going to look at, first point. Effective operations, or operational costs as some people talk about. So what are you doing today? What's the actual cost to your business if you're doing things manually? What are you looking at? Can you automate it? Human errors. Everyone's made a mistake in their career. I've made mistakes. If you get a call on at 4:45 on a Friday afternoon and you need to deploy something, you're not thinking about doing that piece of work that's got a 50-point checklist that needs to be done. You're thinking about going to the footy or going out to dinner or going to the movies or what you're doing on the weekend. I've accidentally deployed patches to service in my old life on a Friday afternoon. By mistake, because it's easy to do when you're doing it as a human, because sometimes we just make mistakes. So time to market. And there's two areas I talk about with this with customers. So the first one is how quickly we can get projects completed, or how quickly we can get things out for developers if we need to get something from a competitive perspective for customers. And the other one is if we need to do things in a hurry, so move workloads out of one area to another. And I'm going to talk about that as an example with one of the customers that I dealt with. So complexity and scale. So one thing that I tend to find is the more complex an environment, the more difficult it is to get it done in a timely manner for a business. And sometimes businesses cannot get certain workloads in place, the more complex it becomes. And scale, we've talked a little bit, I'm sure you've seen a fair bit about cloud this week, about the way they can do scale. Can we scale worldwide? Can we scale to the needs that we need to by doing it manually? In most cases, no, we can't. We need to have some type of automation in place. Skilled IT pros and innovation. Always amazes me when I go on site and I see customers, how skilled some customers I work with are and how mundane some of the work that they do is. Businesses are not taking advantage of the skill sets that they've got. And then leading on from that, improving satisfaction levels. So giving people the opportunity to use their skills, giving them a reason to actually get out of bed and go to work and be excited. Again, I go on site with people and they get disappointed when we've finished a week with them or a couple of days with them because they've had the chance to do something. And I usually see two things happen. Either people get demotivated and don't enjoy their job and you get less productivity out of them, or they just leave and go to a different company or a different area. And I've seen that a number of times. Predictable outcome. Making sure that every time we deploy a workload, it's the same every single time. It's pretty common for us to go on site and see totally different configurations all over the place. DevOps, that old battleground between developers and operational staff. Automation is a key part to DevOps. Now, I'm not going to talk about DevOps a great deal today. If you want a great session on it, that's a link to a DevOps session that was done by, let me get his name right, I think it was Donovan Brown, who's a Microsoft employee, well, was the last time I looked, at Ignite 2015. So definitely download this deck and have a look at that session. All right, so what do we automate? What can we actually automate? So which process is the most time-consuming? So what's taking the most out of your day, your week, your month? Pretty obvious stuff. Where are service levels suffering the most? So sometimes you might not see some things that are occurring. So you might be getting 50 calls a day to reset users' passwords. So it might potentially be something that's pretty obvious to go and automate. Which processes are visible to customers? So it might not be something that happens every single day, but when it goes wrong, it could impact the business's reputation. So you may want to automate that piece of work. Which problems recur most frequently? Are you just doing the same thing over and over again manually? Are you just putting the fire out all the time? I can tell you where I used to work. I used to patch servers monthly. And I can literally tell you every single server, they would have problems. We knew exactly what services went wrong, but did we automate it? No, we did the same thing every month. I'd call up the developers, they'd jump on. It would cost the business money because I had to do overtime, and then the developer had to do overtime. And then I took time out of my weekend, which I didn't want to do. I'd rather just go to the footy. Which process is the most expensive for the business? Again, this might be something you might only do as a once-off or a couple of times a year, but if you get it wrong, and it's going to cost the business millions of dollars every minute, 10 minutes, hour, you might want to think about automating that process. Okay, and now before we move to how to automate, the three main areas I usually see when I go to customers and we do automation, we've already talked about one, user provisioning, is a pretty popular one. Who hasn't gone on site and not had an account set up or group, the appropriate group set up? It's happened to pretty much everybody. Workload provisioning, pretty common. And in before cloud, it was usually sort of provisioning VMs in VMware or Hyper-V or whatever else you're using. Now it tends to be deploying on-premises on a hypervisor or potentially IaaS VMs inside a cloud service. Now it's also PaaS services that we're deploying, so things like web apps and SQL Azure as well. And then the final one, the third one, we see a lot of is patching. There's lots of different complex scenarios when it comes to patching. It's all cool to say, oh, we've got this great tool. It'll patch everything for you. Woo! It's not the case in most cases when we go to different businesses. There's lots of different business reasons why patching is extremely complex. So how to automate? Now, there's one thing I have learned in all the time that I've done automation, and pretty much anyone who does automation will agree with me, that one size does not fit all. I can't take a piece of automation that I've done at customer A over here, pick it up, drop it at customer B, and it's just going to work magically. I can potentially take some examples, some scripts, or whatever else I might be doing, and then tweak it and get it working over there, but it's very difficult to go from one customer to another and have exactly the same business requirements, needs, security rules, all those things. So how do we automate? So the first point, and without a doubt the most important point, is plan and design. So get everyone in a room. Get a whiteboard marker, a pen, a piece of paper, a tablet, whatever it is that you use, and write down the process from start to finish. Plan the inputs, the outputs, what you're connecting to. What's the security requirements? We'll go through some steps on how to plan and design in a minute. Then develop. Does a team have the skills needed? Do we need to ramp people up? Do we need to bring somebody in to help us develop this particular process? Build it with whatever tool you choose to use. Test, and test again. You've probably heard it 1,000 times. Make sure you've got some sort of dev test environment. In this day and age, you should not have a dev test environment. There's so many ways to spin up a temporary dev test environment if you need it. So if you're sitting there and your manager's sitting next to you and you've been screaming at him for the last year and a half to get that, just elbow him aside and just ask him to get that for you. Source control. Who's used source control in the crowd? Not enough people. Probably about half of the people. So, it's nothing new. Developers have been doing it for years. You'll hear people talk about it in the DevOps, any DevOps sessions you go to. So, if I explain it in a basic method, if I have a PowerShell script, I can write that PowerShell script to source control, and that becomes version 1 if I check it in. Bob, who I work with, comes along. He grabs the PowerShell script, does a couple of things, changes it up, and that becomes version 2 when he checks it in. If there's something wrong with it, I can look between version 1 and version 2 and compare them, and then just make some changes, check it in again, and I have version 3, and we're all happy. So we can just naturally develop our scripts and see the history of those scripts. There are a great set of links to source control information in the next slide that you can download and look at. Release and build documentation. Again, you've probably heard it 1,000 times. Make sure you document everything. You'd be amazed how often I talk to customers. I even have an engagement coming up in the next couple of months where I have to go sit with them to figure out what all the automation that they've done in the past is actually doing, because the person who did it has gone and left and he didn't document anything. Fantastic. Always fun stuff. Then go and review and close that. So reference links I talked about, I'll spin on from that. So topics to cover off during the design phase. Error handling. You're probably already doing some type of error handling, whether it's writing to an event log or log files or whatever it might be. Just create an automation piece for that and use that as a repeatable process. Then logging. There's no point having an awesome build process that takes an hour and a half and you have no idea what step you're up to. It also makes it very difficult when you try to do some troubleshooting. How do you actually review the logs? From writing to a log file, to SQL, am I creating log files and pumping it up into OMS and getting a nice dashboard out of it? How do I actually look at it? Being someone who's used config manager most of my life, I love log files. Job concurrency is a very important point. So if I want to shut down 100 servers all at once, I potentially need to have parallel execution for all those 100 servers. I may have multiple processes that I need to do between parallel and sequential, and we'll talk about that in my customer example. Integration and ITSM integration. What am I touching? What tools am I connecting to? Is there a natural connector to it with something like, if I have Service Manager, has a natural connector into Orchestrator, for example. If I've got connectors between OMS and other products as well. Then how will it trigger? How am I actually going to kick it off? Do I have a web interface that then invokes some sort of automation process? Do I use a schedule to kick off that process? Do I use something like OMS or Ops Manager to invoke a piece of automation, like an automated recovery task, for example? The other point I forgot to mention before with integration was, do I have something like a PowerShell module to connect to those products? Do I have something like a REST web service to connect to those products? And then without a doubt, the most important thing to consider is security. So who's going to run it? Do they have access to it? Who's going to be the administrator for it? Do they have access to that as well? Firewall ports we need to open up. Service accounts, do I need to create any? Or can I use something like a service principal name, which we can do in Azure Automation, rather than create a separate service account? And where's it going to run? Is it going to be on-premises? Is it going to be in the cloud? What tool have I got, and can it do what I need it to do? Okay, so customer examples. First customer example, automate SQL patching. Seems pretty simple, doesn't it? So let's go through it. Current process takes 2.5 full-time staff 6 months to complete a fecal patching cycle. Now, the reason why is because this customer had hundreds of SQL servers and each SQL server had multiple instances, but we couldn't patch every single instance at the same time for business reasons, which made it extremely complex. They needed to go, they had a number of staff, they had some PowerShell scripts, but it took quite a long time for them to do that. And tracking it and managing it was quite difficult. So the tools we used were Orchestrator. At the time, they had that in place already, and some PowerShell. So we used a bit of both, Orchestrator Activities and some PowerShell, and SQL. SQL was our way for us to trigger off the actual automation piece, and also where we were reviewing the process and logging the information. So we had the server name, the instance name when we wanted to patch, and we also tracked what process it was up to when we were actually patching those servers. So the actual resolution took 2 weeks, around 80 hours, to design, build, test and deploy a fully automated solution. That involved, I think it was around 2.5-3 days of sitting in a room, just planning and designing it. It's amazing how much people do not realise that they actually do. You'll say to them, how long does it take you to do this? Oh, it takes a day or two. And then when you sit down and go and do a plan and design, it's actually taken them probably a week to do it, because they're just doing stuff on the fly. They're not thinking about it. It was pretty complex in the fact that we had so many servers and we had to monitor where they were running through. So we had to have parallel execution for server execution. So we needed to run, say, 50 servers at once. But we also needed sequential execution when we were patching the instances, because they needed to be patched one at a time, rebooted, and then patched the next instance and continue on. So benefits were around 2,400 hours per patching cycle, or around 4,800 hours back to the business if it was done twice in a year. So have a think about that. That's not a small amount of time that's given back to the staff. So we think about those satisfaction levels, using the skills now, because we weren't just sitting there trying to patch servers. And they were able to innovate and add value back to the business. So automate workload provisioning, customer example number two. The problem, and there are a few problems with this customer. The current process takes multiple resources, a number of weeks to provision and configure even simple workloads for developers, which slows down the DevOps process. So developers weren't happy. It's taking 2 weeks every single time I ask for a workload. And this is typical. This is pretty typical of standard manual workload provisioning that I see at customers. It'll take them quite a while to actually get something out there. Errors in the configuration of the workloads. So it was actually quite not so good. It was about 40-50% of the time when developers got the workloads, they weren't configured the way they asked them to. So that created more problems, because the developers then had to write their own scripts to configure the servers, because of the fact they didn't want to go and ask for another workload because it would take another 2 weeks. And then workload costs significantly higher in the current data center and need to be moved to one of multiple cloud providers to reduce and control costs. So remember that time to market point that I talked about? We really need to move things as quickly as possible, save the company some money. So the tools. Azure Automation was the tool that they chose to use because it pretty much ticked all the boxes they needed. PowerShell was used to basically deploy the workloads and also to do things like naming conventions and particular requirements that they had. They used JSON templates, which, for those who don't know, is basically a declarative template that lets us specify the resources that we want to deploy out into Azure and how those resources are configured and if we're connecting to existing resources. The most important thing that we used was PowerShell DSC, or Desired State Configuration. Who in the crowd has used PowerShell DSC before? So close to half. Again, not enough. But then after, if we come back next year, everyone's going to put their hands up, aren't they? So I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about PowerShell DSC, because it's important. So DSC, in its simplest form, allows me to create a declarative configuration file. And inside that file, I can do things like enable features or set registry settings or run a script. I can do some pretty complex stuff inside there. So let's say I want to deploy a web server. I can turn on web server feature equals enabled in my configuration file. And I can either push or I can create a pull server where the server actually grabs that configuration file and drags it down. And once the server, which we call a node, grabs that configuration file, I can apply monitor, or apply an autocorrect, which means I do it once and then I think by default it's every 15 minutes it'll just reapply those settings. So the server will say, hey, I need to turn web services on. If someone goes and removes it, I go, hey, someone's removed it. I'll go and turn web services back on again. Now what we tend to find when we go to customers is they'll have a server image configuration, server version, and some type of configuration that they're trying to do. So let's call this server image configuration George version 2.0. All right. Everyone wants to go, and why wouldn't you want George? Everyone wants to go, so my customer that I was talking about wants George version 2.0 out there. But when they're deploying George version 2.0, they find they get George version 3.0. And on occasion, they'll find George version 4.0. And without fail, you'll find an old retired version of George, George version 1.0. If you use PowerShell DSC, you can be confident that when you deploy the workload, you'll have George version 2.0 across your fleet. Thank you, I'll be here all week. So back to my customer. Glad that joke worked, actually. I was a little worried about it. So the resolution took 2 weeks or 80 hours to design, build, test, and deploy an automated solution. So benefits. Provision time went from 2 weeks to 1 hour. Have a think about that. I'm a developer. I'm used to it taking 2 weeks to get something, and all of a sudden I get it in 1 hour. And this is not unusual. Again, I see and I talk to people all the time and do work for people all the time. And I talk to people who've got the most complex workloads you can imagine, and they've cut it down from around the same, between 1 to 3 hours. Depending on what they're trying to do. The workloads were in the desired state. They had George version 2.0 everywhere. So DSC was what they needed for that. They got that predictable outcome that we were talking about. They were saving 80 hours per workload. Now, think about that. If I get 10 requests a month, that's, 800 hours. I better get my math right. If I get 10 requests a month for an entire year, that's around 9,600 hours. Anyone good at math? I think that's right. So that's a lot of time given back to the business. And these guys were probably one of the busiest operational teams I think I've ever seen. They were flat out. They had so much work on, it was not funny. So they were able to actually do more work, create more automation organically based on what they'd done, because they had more time to do that. They had more time to innovate. Satisfaction levels increased again. Increased acceleration of workload migration. So they're actually able to move workloads into those cloud services. They're actually able to either decommission or start writing some more automation scripts to actually move things over. So they're able to save the business money, which was the most important thing. So final customer example, automate server patching. So, current problem, current process takes one full-time staff member a full week to start and complete the entire server and workstation patching process every single month. This was a fairly complicated environment. So it was taking them around 10 hours a day, 50 hours a month, or 600 hours a year. So we're doing both server and workstation patching. Tools we used, they had Orchestrator in place. I pretty much wrote all PowerShell scripts in this case. So Orchestrator was just manipulating those scripts and doing the work that I wanted it to do. And SCCM, in this case it was System Center 2012 R2 Configuration Manager, which I believe they've gone to current branch now. Now, the reason why, with these guys, they hated Patch Tuesday or Patch Wednesday as we all call it in Australia. They hated it. It was not a fun week for them. They used to be quite stressed out when it got to that week. A lot of pressure. The business really needed all the patching done in that week's period. So they had a real tough time one. And innovation was slowing down for them. They had a few resources who were quite good at doing things like writing reports, but they didn't have time to do that because they would have to do it out of hours. So Resolution took around 8 days, 6 to 4 hours to design, build, test and deploy an automated solution. And they did some pretty cool stuff at this customer. I wrote a script to automate maintenance windows, so they were doing that manually. So you can think how easily you could accidentally put the wrong date and time when you're doing that. I actually wrote a blog about it on the Config Manager Dogs blog and put the script up there for anyone who's interested. We do things like write scripts to manipulate auto-deployment rules in Config Manager as well, to auto-download patches and set them up the way we needed to as well. So, benefits, 10 hours a day, 50 hours a month, or what was it, 600 hours a year, and the sanity of an engineer. All right, so job satisfaction definitely increased once this particular solution was in place. And they've done a lot more work with Config Manager since I left. And they're doing even more work now in the next month or two, automating server builds with DSC both in the cloud and on-premises as well. All right, so final thing we'll talk about. Let me just check the time. Cool, we're good. So which tool should I use? So Chef and Puppet are two tools that I tend to see at different enterprises. Chef's actually here. I don't know if anyone's gone on any sessions on the open source track. I think off the top of my head, I think Chef uses it. So they're both declarative automation tools, and they both do a lot more than just automation. Chef uses Ruby. Puppet uses, I think it's Puppet and Ruby DSL language. Anyone using Chef or Puppet in the crowd? Just one or two. Go. I usually tend to see people doing open source workloads or Linux workloads with both of those, but you can do both Windows and open source workloads with those. IFTTT and Microsoft Flow. These are both free tools you can sign up to. They were free the last time I looked. Fairly similar to what they do. A lot of people tend to use them for social media purposes. Brian Farnhill, who's probably not here, he wrote a really cool blog on how you could use IFTTT applets to essentially shut down, to kick off what we call a webhook, to run a runbook to shut down all your Azure VMs. And I use that. I'll actually do that literally at the end of the session. I'll click the applet. It'll shut everything down for me. I'm going to show you how we can use Microsoft Flow to do the same thing in what I'm going to call my mega awesome demo. That's my joke for you, Matty. I told him I'd say at least one dad joke. A little bit later today. Logic apps. So I'm sure everyone saw the Scott Guthrie demo Logic apps, so I don't really have to explain it. I hope I don't. If you didn't, watch the video. Really cool tool that allows us to tie in essentially public APIs and services together without writing any code. I pretty much call it like, it's like the SaaS version of Orchestrator in the cloud, for anyone who's used Orchestrator, but we'll look at that a little bit later. PowerShell, hopefully everyone's at least jumped onto PowerShell. You know, scripting language that allows us to tie into pretty much any resource these days. And then the two tools, or three tools actually, that we'll talk about and demo today, Azure Automation, which is our public cloud service, and Orchestrator, which is part of the System Center suite. The other one that's essentially sort of part of Orchestrator is SMA, or Service Management Automation, that came out when we released System Center 2012 R2 as part of the Orchestrator Media, and was sort of the version one of Azure Automation. There's the link to Brian's blog if anyone's interested. And on top of that, there's many more. I literally could talk about tools that are available out there for an hour and a half. There's just that much out there today. So Orchestrator, first tool we're going to talk about. Now, I'm going to talk about a couple of things with these tools. So I'm going to talk about each one of them, pros and cons, or challenges and pros, I should say. And I'm also going to talk about migration from Orchestrator to Azure Automation, and also what options you've got outside of migration. Just so I get a good picture, how many people in this room have used or have got Orchestrator installed in their environment? So, yeah, again, about half. It's like the default, it's like half people. All right, so challenges and pros. And we're talking about 2016 here. So no support for 64-bit PowerShell. They really just released bug fixes, essentially, in Orchestrator 2016. A lot of the features were in SMA. So for anyone who hasn't used it, essentially it's a bit of a pain to run anything outside of PowerShell 2 32-bit in Orchestrator. You've got to sort of wrap a PowerShell script within another PowerShell script and then manipulate the output. You can import, there's an integration paper that Charles Joy wrote that allows you to sort of do it directly in those activities, but it's still a bit of an effort. No checkpointing by default. You can achieve it if you put a lot of extra activities in there, but by default it's not so simple. No PowerShell support for administrators, for Orchestrator. There is modules that allow you to invoke runbooks and things like that and get data, but nothing from an administration perspective. There is a lack of third-party integration packs, and the ones that are there, that are available from MS, aren't as nearly as good as some of the PowerShell modules that are available. On top of that, before I talk about source control, there are companies like Calverion who do release integration packs that have a lot of extra activities you can use. No source control built in, which is a real pain point for a lot of customers. Parallel execution. I always put question marks on this because you can achieve parallel execution in Orchestrator. A lot of people say you can't. You can. But it's limited by the number of jobs that you run on what we call a runbook server for those who haven't used it before. So we have what's called runbooks in Orchestrator, and we run those on a runbook server which runs the actual process. And these are limited by default up to 50. Now, if I'm trying to run 100 servers that I want to shut down at once, I can't do that. I'll run 50 concurrently, and then the other 50 will actually just get queued inside SQL, and then they'll wait for those to finish. So I don't really have that true parallel execution. But you can do it if you do put the effort in. Pros, the graphical interface, it's easy to get started, and the drag and drop. People loved the way it looked and the fact that you didn't really necessarily need any immediate scripting skills. You really did when you started using it in any depth, but you could start off with Orchestrator. There was a really large community out there. It was quite popular because it was part of the System Center suite, and most people tended to be licensed for it already, so it wasn't that difficult to implement. It's quite an easy tool to install as well. Scorch.coplex.com and Orchestrator.coplex.com are the community websites you can go to and download that. And there's a lot of stuff on there that will resolve the issues that you see on the left-hand side there. So migration, there's two options. The second one I'll demo a bit later. The first one is a toolkit that you can download, and it's got two things. One is a module that includes all the standard activities that you get out of the box out of Orchestrator. And the other one is a module that will help you migrate a runbook from an Orchestrator runbook into a graphical runbook inside Azure Automation, or graphical PowerShell workflow runbook, and I'll show you that a little bit later. One gotcha with the migration tool, or a couple. So the naming convention has to be allowed inside Azure Automation. So if you do things like, there used to be blogs on how you should name your Orchestrator runbooks, like 1_1 and things like that. You just need to change the name of your runbook if it's not allowed, but you'll get an error out of it. If the commandlet's not there or supported, you'll get a warning, and then when you go into Azure Automation, it'll actually tell you, hey, this commandlet's not allowed. So this one, in this example, is the send platform event, which was very Orchestrator specific. So let's have a quick look at Orchestrator, because it is part of my demo a little bit later. Alright, so before I start, just checking my time again. Yep, we're good. So before I start, I want to talk about a couple of architectural aspects between Orchestrator, SMA, and Azure Automation. So each of them have got what we call runbooks. Now in Orchestrator we have on the side, we've got integration packs, and each integration pack has an activity that we can tie together that you can see inside here to create multiple workflows, success, failure, etc. In SMA and Azure Automation, these runbooks are done with PowerShell modules and commandlets. So essentially scripts that we can create. Same sort of principle. In Orchestrator, as I said, the runbooks run on a runbook server. In SMA and Azure Automation, the runbooks run on what we call a runbook worker. Same principle, but does a lot more than what runbook server does. Each tool has essentially global settings, so we've got variables that we can encrypt. Schedules that we can essentially kick off a runbook. We also have what we call connections that are created based on integration packs that are import. Same sort of principle. In SMA, we have the same type of assets, but I'll go through those as we go through each tool. So as you can see, and we'll have a quick look at the runbook that I'm going to migrate. So you can see inside here we've got an activity that allows me to specify a parameter. So it's like creating a parameter in PowerShell. I've got a link. That's a success link. I've got a link that's a failure link that you can see inside here. And I've got a PowerShell script that I'm specifying a username for my initialized data. Let me just zoom into that. I've just got an output where I've returned data from the get unique username activity that I created. And then I've just got a standard activity that I've created. It's got my server name. I'm going to write it the event log to, the output from my get unique username, and then what type of event it actually is. From a migration perspective, and we'll come back into Orchestrator a bit later as part of the demo, you can see I've actually got the PowerShell module already loaded. It's got some info on the commandlet that I can use. This is the commandlet that's already been set up. Now, I've already run it, so it's just simple. Convert for SMA runbook, runbook path, output folder, and in my case, it was successful. So I've got my graphical runbook that I can port into Azure Automation. I've also got a couple of logs. If we look at the progress log quickly, you can see all the activities converted over. The red is just the name error handling. That's why it's come up as red. And then it just tells me where that runbook's been exported. We'll have a look at that when I get into Azure Automation. Right. Back to five. All right. Next tool, which, as I was saying, came out as part of System Center 2012 R2, is Service Management Automation. Now, some of the challenges with SMA, there's no drag and drop user interface and no graphical authoring, so it wasn't anywhere near as popular as Orchestrator. You have to use the WAP interface, which is the old Windows Azure Pack interface that people used to use with SCVMN for private cloud, essentially. There's other problems with the WAP interface that I'll talk about in a second. Pros allowed you to use PowerShell workflow, which gave you native checkpointing and parallel execution. Now in 2016, we have native PowerShell support and PowerShell V5 support. It's also got support for third-party PowerShell modules. So we can import the PowerShell modules both in SMA and into Azure Automation. I think in Azure Automation, it's up to 100 megs off the top of my head. There's also an ISE add-on that's added to SMA. So anyone who's used it in the past, you can actually add an ISE add-on onto there. Thing to keep in mind, the other problem with the WAP interface is it will only support PowerShell workflow runbooks. You will not be able to see those native PowerShell runbooks in there. You have to use the ISE add-on. And again, in most cases, if people don't really like the WAP interface, that's probably not an issue for them. Let's have a very quick look at Service Management Automation. All right. There we are. I'm in the wrong screen. So this is the Windows Azure Pack that we can see. For anyone who's used Azure for a while or has jumped in the old classic portal, that's pretty much what it looks like. The automation tab is where we access SMA. Looks very different to Orchestrator. We can access our runbooks, which just lists our runbooks rather than be separated by folders and names of runbooks. And we don't have, we can basically add tags that we can search from. I'm going to quickly look in assets to show you that. So you'll see I've actually got modules, so PowerShell modules, which have got commandlets in them. If I go to add setting, you'll see I can add a connection, again, which gets created as part of a module with some metadata that adds that information. I can add a credential, and in SMA I can add a PowerShell and a certificate credential, and they can be encrypted if I need them to be. I can add a variable that can actually change within a script inside SMA. You can't actually change a variable in Orchestrator, which is sort of ironic. Not really named that well. You can add a schedule, so you can schedule when you actually want that runbook to run. Now, if we go back to runbooks, you'll see, I'll just click on the first one that I've got here. Fairly simple, I've got a dashboard. I can click on jobs and get information on any previous jobs that have run. I can author it in the WAP interface, which is a little bit clunky and not really that popular with most people, but I can go in there, edit my script, test it from the interface inside here. And I can do things like look at schedule, and I can also configure the runbooks and change the records to like verbose and progress records as well, which is what I can do in the other tools as well. The ISE add-on looks exactly the same as the Azure Automation ISE add-on, which we'll look at later for anyone who's used it. Basically, it just gets added into ISE. I have got my configuration. I've signed in using Windows authentication. I can access my runbooks. One thing you'll notice, if I scroll down here, this extremely complex runbook that I've written up here, that I have access to both my PowerShell scripts, so native PowerShell, and also PowerShell workflow in SMA now. I can test, download runbooks, and run the testing from here, write them, save and create brand new ones. I can also do the same with my assets. inside SMA. So there's a lot more you can do with it than you used to be able to for anyone who potentially has used it in the past. That one. Go quicker. All right. So Azure Automation. And this is where we're going to spend pretty much the rest of the session today on Azure Automation. So people looking at me going, why is he talking about Orchestrator? I'm probably happy right now. So challenges. It's a public cloud service. So a lot of customers I deal with, not a lot, there's a few, may not be able to run, have scripts stored or credentials stored inside public cloud services and may not be able to use Azure Automation. Graphical interface. So a lot of people are expecting the graphical interface in Azure Automation to be Orchestrator, which is not the case. The graphical interface is totally different, and we'll have a look at it in a minute, but I'll let you all judge for yourself. They've done a lot of changes to it in the last 12 months. You don't necessarily need to know PowerShell to use it, but you sort of used to. The cost is fairly inexpensive. There's a free and a basic tier. The free tier gives you 500 minutes a month of runtime and up to 5 PowerShell DSC nodes. We'll explain the DSC in a second. And then the basic, I looked at it just before, I think it was 0.003 cents a minute, something like that. And then it's about $7 a DSC node for every server that you're connecting to. It's got both graphical and text authoring. Now, the advantage of that is the fact that no matter how skilled your staff are, if you've got somebody who's not that confident with something like PowerShell, they can go into the graphical interface and start using that. Or if I've got someone who's proficient in PowerShell, they can just write a PowerShell runbook. And the massive advantage is the fact that as long as I have, I can actually get a graphical runbook to call a textual runbook and a textual runbook to call a graphical runbook. So people can do their own work and call each other's runbooks, which is pretty cool. We have both PowerShell workflow and native PowerShell inside there, and I can do that for both graphical and textual. For those runbooks to call each other, they have to be the same type of runbook, either a PowerShell workflow one or native PowerShell. We have DSC support. So remember we were talking about the pool servers before? So we can actually use Azure Automation as a pool server. Now the hybrid worker. So the hybrid worker is what I call the game changer. So the way the hybrid worker works, remember we were talking about the runbook worker in Azure Automation? So I kick off a runbook, it kicks off in the cloud. The way the hybrid worker works is I register my hybrid worker with OMS. For those who don't know what the heck I'm talking with OMS, you need to go to one of those sessions. Once I've registered the runbook worker, to OMS, I can then run a PowerShell commandlet that registers that server to what we call a hybrid worker group. When I run my runbooks, I can choose to run them in Azure, or I can choose to run them in a hybrid worker group. And then if I've got multiple servers in there, they'll be highly available by default, and it'll go and choose one of those and run the runbook on there, so on-premises. And we'll have a look at that in the second demo that I'll do in a second. Webhooks, pretty cool add-on that was added to Azure Automation. Allows me to create a URL that will essentially invoke a runbook in Azure Automation. RBAC, so role-based access control. Anyone who's used System Center will be pretty familiar with that. Allows us to specify profiles and rights to users into Azure Automation. Source control, currently have GitHub support, and I think TFS is still coming soon. And finally, there's an ISE add-on for Azure Automation. So essentially exactly the same as what we just saw with SMA, but it's been around for a while. It was the initial one that was created. So let's have a look at Azure Automation. Might help if I change the screen. There we are. So this is the Azure Automation portal, essentially, that sits inside the Azure portal. So the first thing we'll look at is assets. So you can see inside here we've got schedules that I've created. I've got connections that have been created. And in this case, they're based on some of the SPNs that I've created. I've got variables that can be encrypted. Credentials, which can be essentially anything. So your username, domain names, whatever you need to add inside there. Again, they can be encrypted. I have certificates, and in this case I've created two SPN certificates so I can natively connect to my Azure subscription if I've got one rather than having to have to create service accounts, which is really cool. They introduced that, I think it was about 4 or 5 months ago. And then module perspective, I've got all my PowerShell modules and commandlets that sit inside there. I can add a module that I've created or I've downloaded into Azure Automation. Again, I think it's about 100 megs that you can upload. One thing they've added fairly recently is the fact that you can browse the PowerShell gallery directly from here. So I can go into the gallery, I can click on any module that's inside there, look at what the module is, what commandlets are available, and I can just go ahead and import that directly into Azure Automation, which is pretty nice. Okay, let's just close that. Okay, so from a DSC perspective, you can see I've got my configurations that have been loaded, and it'll compile those configurations for me automatically. I have my DSC nodes. Now, with DSC, I can have either Azure VMs, or I can have on-premises VMs. So that can be VMs that sit on-prem with you. It can be VMs that sit in another cloud service. They just need access through appropriate firewall ports and some URLs. As long as they can do that, you can basically use DSC for any server whatsoever, no matter where it sits. So if we go to hybrid worker groups, you'll see I've got two hybrid worker groups. I've got my first one here, which is the one we're going to look at, and I've got another one that I'm not using today. Let's have a quick look at runbooks. So you'll see it's got a list of all my runbooks, and I can tag these runbooks, which is used for other things, but in this case, we're just going to sort our runbooks inside here. So I've got three runbooks that we're going to look at today. The first one's the runbook that we migrated from Orchestrator. So let's go in there. This is the Get Unique Username, and you'll see once we jump inside there, let's go to Edit. We've got, looks fairly similar to what you saw earlier in the Orchestrator runbook. So we've got my initialized data. If I click on that and go to author activity logic, so you'll notice that it's actually gone and imported the actual username that I specified before, which is like just adding a parameter in a PowerShell script. My links have been set up correctly automatically for me. So it's specified the fact that this is a success link and this one is a fail and a warning link. If I go to get unique username, and this is one thing it does do really well, it's actually migrated my PowerShell script perfectly. There's no issues with it. The thing that I do like about it is the fact that it'll automatically recognise any other inputs from Orchestrator. So you'll see it's already put the PowerShell I need to specify that the previous activity is the input or the parameter for this particular activity. And if I go to return username, you'll notice that it's actually already configured that activity for me with what we call an activity output in Azure Automation. So there's get unique username, and the output is the new username that I created earlier. And the error handling is that standard activity that I was using, and you'll notice that it's actually used the PowerShell module that I installed from the migration toolkit. I've got my server name, the source, the severity. If I go to the message, it's actually using, again, the activity output from get unique username and test. So this is an example of runbook that migrated quite easily into Azure Automation. Is everything going to migrate easily in Azure Automation? Probably unlikely. It's just something you need to decide if you're doing that with Orchestrator today. But I'm going to talk about other solutions that you can do outside of migrating them. Okay. So from an IRC perspective, looks, again, pretty much exactly the same as what we saw earlier. You see I've got it all configured to my details. I'm signed into my automation account. I can see my runbooks inside here. I can create brand new runbooks, different types, script and workflow. I can't work on graphical runbooks. I'm not sure if that's in the pipeline. I haven't heard anything recently. I can look and create my DSC configurations, and same with my assets as well. I can do essentially pretty much most things that I can do inside the Azure portal inside IRC. And I love working in the IRC, so most of the time I tend to work inside here. Okay. Oh, that's what I'm doing. All right. So, demo. This is my mega awesome demo. All right, so before I start talking about this, what this is going to show you is I'm going to show you how you can basically still use Orchestrator without the need to actually migrate your runbooks from Azure Automation, if you want to start playing and using Azure Automation today. All right. So I'm going to, just for the heck of it, click on a Microsoft Flow button on my phone, because I can. Why not? That is going to call a webhook in Azure Automation. Not in Azure Automation. That's going to call a webhook, which is going to call a runbook in Azure Automation. That is going to kick off on a hybrid worker in an isolated on-prem environment that I've got while sitting in Azure. That is going to call the Orchestrator REST web service. That's going to kick off a runbook in Orchestrator on a runbook server that's on-prem. Then that's going to run. It's going to return data back through the REST web service, through my hybrid worker, back to Azure Automation. So we're using the REST web service to still use runbooks in Orchestrator. I've got lots of customers who use Orchestrator, and there's lots of customers who've done a lot of work in Orchestrator today. The amount of effort it's probably going to take them to migrate those runbooks in Azure Automation means it's probably not worth doing. They might as well just develop a new version of that in a year or 6 months or whatever it might be and just leave the runbook running in Orchestrator. So you've got multiple options to do this. So we will do accentuate the point. So Flow, Webhook and Azure Automation all sit in the cloud, and the hybrid worker and Orchestrator are on-prem. So anything you're doing today is what you can do in the cloud, on-prem. Okay? So let's look at that. Demo, Azure Automation, hybrid worker calling Orchestrator, or the mega awesome demo. It's a demo you're going to be talking about for years. All right, so there's two runbooks I'm using. So the first one, which I've called Start Scorch Runbook Return Data, is essentially going to call Orchestrator and then return the data back into Azure Automation, as I was saying. Now, this particular script was originally written by another Microsoft employee named Tiander Turpin. Thanks, guys. There we go. Let's go back in and look at that again. Thank you. That would have been awkward. Isn't that awesome demo? An awesome demo? No, it's a PowerPoint. So, that's the runbook we're going to look at. So, again, this was a runbook that was originally written by Tiander Turpin, but it was written for SMA. So we used a PowerShell module in SMA that did things like call an Orchestrator runbook or just get data from the REST web service. So I've grabbed that module and I've just imported it into my hybrid runbook worker. So let's have a quick look at the actual runbook itself. Now, myself and another PFE out of Melbourne, Anthony Wotherston, we sort of rewrote this because the original runbook only took in two parameters. So we rewrote it so it took in a hash table so I could have as many parameters as I wanted to. Because I might have 10 or 15 parameters that I need to kick off in Orchestrator. So the first part you'll see is where I'm essentially calling that hash table, and the second line there is the runbook path. So what's the actual runbook that I'm calling? The second part there you'll see we're basically providing credentials, the URL and other things like that. You'll see here I'm piping the URL using one of those PowerShell commandlets, and then I'm specifying the actual runbook data. So I'm using a lot of those parameters that we talked about a bit earlier. The next part of it's basically just changing parameter detail so I can actually pipe the values that I've got from the hash table into parameters that I'm going to call in Orchestrator. And then you'll see I've got a line here that's essentially just kicking off the runbook using that PowerShell module in Orchestrator and then putting that data into a variable. The last part of it has basically got an if and a while statement, and what that's doing, and you'll see there's two lines that say equals running or equals pending, we're basically just polling the REST web service. We're reading off it, it's basically in XML from memory. Is what we're saying pending or is it saying running? Because what we're looking for is to be completed. Once it's completed, we're going to grab data from that and then we're going to return it back to Azure Automation. And then you can see there we're actually returning the data back in a separate variable into Azure Automation. The runbook that we're going to kick off is this one here, which is just a one that I called creatively Start Scorch Runbook Tester Workflow, because I was clearly either too petrified that it would stop working if I changed it again. And if we view that, you'll see all I've done is I've created a hash table with two parameters, with my name, so first name, if you remember me, and I'll show you the parameters in a second in Oxford. First name equals George, second name equals Spirakis, and the rumble path, which is the actual path of the rumble that I want to kick off. The last line there on line 10 that you can see is the runbook that I'm calling from Azure Automation. So I'm calling a child runbook. So I've essentially got a parent runbook to control the process, and it's calling that child runbook where I've input the parameters that I'm looking for. Let's just close that. So if we click on webhooks, you'll notice that I've already created the webhook. There it is, Ignite 2017, the expiration date and when it was last triggered. And if I go to jobs, you'll see the last run job was at early this morning when I last ran this to make sure that it was actually functioning. So we'll come back to that after I kick off the actual runbook. But before we do that, I'm going to show you the runbook and I'm going to show you the hybrid worker. So we'll just go back into Orchestrator quickly. So this is the runbook we're going to kick off. And you'll see, again, it kicked off at about 9:59 a.m. server time this morning. My initialized data has got those two parameters I talked about, so first name and second name. And I'm not going to show you return data because it's a nice surprise for you once we get out of it. If we go to the hybrid worker, we can essentially see what's going on in the hybrid worker in the event viewer and Microsoft SMA operational. So what I'm going to show you here is just simply an event that shows that the actual runbook worker started. So you'll see hybrid runbook worker started, which is event ID 15003. And it's just got the name of my hybrid runbook worker, which is simperhw.simper.com. All right, so I'm going to try and mirror my phone. Should be mirrored already. And then we will kick off. If Miracast stops working, then I'll just do the old camera. There we are. Looks like we have to do the old camera. There we go. Try one more time. What's thinking? We'll just do the camera. There's always a backup to a backup to a backup. Hello, everybody. All right, so you can see not much at the moment. All right, look, this is sophisticated stuff. This is not what I wanted. I wanted to mirror cast and be all massively cool, but, you know, it's all good. So you can see I've got my nice Ignite button there. So I'm going to press that, and it's going to call the webhook. So everyone ready? You want to give me a countdown or something? 2, 1, go. Work, please work. Work, 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 work. Work, work, work. Give me a tick. Woo! All right, it's always good when a demo actually works. All right, bye-bye camera. So now I'm going to go into Azure Automation. I'm going to refresh. We should see a job. Rock and roll. We've got a job that's with queued. So it's called the webhook. It's now created a job in Azure Automation. So at the moment it's queued. We're just going to wait a second for that to start. And then I'm going to jump back onto my hybrid worker. So you can see it's starting. And then the hybrid worker will go through a process. It'll load both the runbooks, and then it'll start the actual runbook and call Orchestrator. So we'll just jump back in. You notice we've got some new events. I'm just going to refresh that. This is our hybrid worker. So I should see a couple of verbose entries, and there they are. So notice I've got two entries inside here, and I'm just going to highlight something before I zoom into it. So notice how I've got a complex runbook loaded and a child runbook loaded. And the name of the runbook is Start Scorch Runbook Tester Workflow. So my parent runbook's kicked off. And it's kicked off my child runbook as well. And then I should get another entry. I think off the top of my head it's 3183. So I've done this demo that many times now. Which is going to then show that the runbook is running. So I'm just going to refresh that now. Let's see if we've got a 3183. Doesn't really matter if we don't see it. It runs that quickly. That's already completed. There's 3181. So there it is. So there's 3183, which says job status change running. So it's actually kicking off the job. And then if we go a little bit further up, you'll see an entry that says 3181, job status change completed. So this is definitely where you would go if you want to do some troubleshooting on your hybrid worker. So let's go into Orchestrator. Just make sure that actually worked in the first place. I'm just going to, go back into log history, refresh that. There we go. Job ran at 8:29. If I double click on it, I've got both my initialized data and my return data ran. So it's run, and then, so now when I query the REST web service, I'll actually have data inside there. So let's go back into Azure Automation, and you'll see that we are completed. Now let's see, what did Orchestrator think of this particular session? Let's zoom in. Return data is, give Jorts Viracus a rating 5. Oh no, I will from Orchestrator. Thanks, Orchestrator. You're my buddy. Thank you, thank you. I did intend to have this particular script that I was talking about put onto GitHub, but I need to talk to the original creator first before I do that. So if I get it on there, I will blog about it on Config Manager Dog. So anyone who's interested in it, just keep an eye on that, and I'll try and get it on there for you in the next week or two. Now, let's go back to our slides. So the last thing I want to talk about is any time I talk to people about scripting or any type of automation, I always have people telling me, I can't do it, I don't want to do scripting, it's too hard, I'm a config manager person, or I'm an exchange person, or I do AD, I'm too old, I'm too young, I don't want to do anything. Anyone who's lucky enough to go see Scott Guthrie Unplugged will have heard him talk about the growth mindset. And for those who didn't and don't know what I'm talking about, the growth mindset, basically in a nutshell, is where you constantly try to grow, you constantly try to learn and do new things. It's where you aren't afraid to fail. You accept that, yeah, I'll make mistakes, but I'll learn from those mistakes. I'm a perfect example of somebody who, over the last couple of years, has worked using the growth mindset. I used to just be a config manager guy. You can ask any of these guys I used to work with and say, yeah, George is the config manager guy. Can't tell you about anything else, but he knows about config manager. I went from config manager to starting to do ops manager. Then I started doing Orchestrator and PowerShell, and then I started doing Azure Automation, SMA, Hyper-V. I didn't do VMware. I don't know why I was about to think of that. And now I do Azure. And anyone who started playing with Azure knows there's a lot inside there you need to learn and play with. And I do a few other things outside of work that I never would have tried if I didn't have a growth mindset. I always look at my son, he's turning 11 on Friday. Happy birthday, Zach. I know he's going to like me saying that. Sorry, everybody, I had to do it. He's always learning. Kids are always doing amazing new things. I walked in to the lounge room one day at home, and my son anyone got kids and they use Mathletics? He was on Mathletics, but he had a timer, and the timer was paused. What was the time pause? He said, oh, it's pretty easy, Dad. I just jumped in the back end cave and I found that we had to change it to pause it. All rock and roll. I just looked at him and said, am I in trouble? I said, no, I'm just the proudest father in the world right now. Bloody awesome. So we can learn a lot from them because they're not isolated. They haven't taught them, said to themselves that this is all I do. It's not. You can learn. You can grow. Start with baby steps. Everyone who's that awesome scripter, I hear all the time, oh, we've got a great guy, he's an awesome scripter. That person had to start somewhere. That's what I was told when I first came and worked with all these PFEs I used to work with. Wow, these guys are amazing. But they started somewhere, didn't they? And you can too. So on that, you can begin your journey. That was supposed to say begin your journey, it was much more effective. With this particular course, it's called Getting Started with Microsoft PowerShell. It's on Microsoft Virtual Academy. And it's done by, it was done a few years ago now, but it's a course I did when I was really struggling and trying to get an understanding of PowerShell. And it really helped me get kicked off. And it's done by Jeffrey Snover, who's the creator of PowerShell. Everyone know who Jeffrey Snover is? We are not worthy. Yes. And Jason Hemlick, who I think is the co-creator of PowerShell.org. It is an awesome course. And it's got the best price in the world. It's free, which most people tend to like. It's split up in between about 12 or 14 modules, and you can just download them and watch them on the train, on the plane. I used to watch them on the treadmill. I didn't do it while I was, didn't have a laptop on there. It would have been a bit funny. But it's a great course to get you started, so please do so. And just do things like open the ISE, and if you can do something manually, don't do it. Try doing PowerShell, and then you just start getting used to the commandlets. And then it gets easier. Then you can start reading files. The one thing I forgot to show everybody in Azure Automation was the fact that there's a gallery. There's actually a script gallery that you can open up, and it's got one that was created by the product group, and there's also a script gallery that is part of the PowerShell gallery. So you can just download examples of those galleries and import them directly into Azure Automation. So do things like that. Look at scripts other people have done. Just try and understand how it's put together. Try and read it. Okay, just have a crack. Have a go. So a couple of final things. Continue your learning path. That's channel 9, msdn.com, TechNet Eval Center, and MVH, we talked about. Session evaluations. You must have enjoyed the session. You're still here. So please fill in the evaluation and please be nice. And just on that, anyone who wants to come out and have a chat or ask any questions, please hang around. But for anyone else, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate taking your time, especially at this later time of the day. Have a fantastic Ignite. Thank you.